One.
This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedashevsky.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Inside College Hockey Podcast. My name is Joe Vedashevsky. We'll be joined tonight by Mike Idlebus and Jess Myers for this edition, recorded November 15th, 2011. This Inch Podcast is presented by the 2012 NCAA Division I Men's Frozen Four.
Years of practice, dedication in and out of the classroom, stamina, persistence, sacrifice. It all leads to this moment. Champions win here. Don't miss the 2012 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 5th and 7th, hosted by the University of Alabama in Huntsville and the Tampa Bay Sports Commission at St. Pete Times Forum in Tampa, Florida. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
All right, pleased to have another podcast for the fine folks who are listening in. As mentioned earlier, my name is Joe Gladyszewski, ECAC Hockey Senior Writer, and also joined tonight by WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. Hello, Jess.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. What's up?
Not much. Feels like winter. Feels like hockey. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Also, Mike Idlebus, special guest of the Inch Podcast and contributing editor. Hello, Bus.
One of these days, I'm going to become a regular, but until then, I'll be happy to be a special guest.
You're just not ready to be a regular.
No.
We're happy to have you, and no matter what capacity you're joining the show. podcast a little different format tonight. Just going to check in. I wanted to get the guys together and talk a little college hockey. We're going to be going over kind of a, as we mentioned in the Inch First Shift this week. If you haven't read it, we're about a third of the way through the season. A lot of teams have played in the area of 10 to 12 games so far, and we found some things out about some teams. There's some we're still trying to get a handle on, and some have not gotten off to the starts they've wanted, even though we might have expected a little more. So we'll look at some of the positives and negatives from around the country, and then we'll get into actually a little bit of in the second half we launch our Hobie tracker, but we'll just talk about it a little bit. We won't have a full tracker, but We'll take a look at the way that Hobie race is shaping up at this point of the season. So, Jess, I guess we'll start with you. One of the teams that you think really has impressed, maybe, and surprised a little bit in the WCHA.
Well, I think you have to start with Minnesota. We've got them ranked number one in the country. We've got them.
Oh no, we don't.
Others have them ranked number one in the country. We have had them top ranked in the past. But, you know, I think, you know, and Bus, you and I talked about this. We kind of expected a bounce back year for the Gophers, but I don't know that anybody expected them to start as strong as they have, to be 10-2 at this point in the season and to only have one WCHA loss after the early road trips they've had to take. So I think that's been the biggest positive surprise that I've seen so far.
Yeah, I think we saw some signs of them coming together as a team down the stretch last year. You know, they weren't very good during the first half of the season. Obviously, they had Alex Kangas get hurt, and Patterson came on and started to play, and then played very well, and he's really picked up right where he left off, if not played better than where he left off.
Absolutely,
but We talked a lot about the Gophers last year, and I think that they're really clicking on all cylinders. Not just from a talent standpoint, but also it seems like that they've got some guys that have really assimilated into different roles, and I think that might have been something that was missing from that team in the past.
Well, and you talk about a carryover from last year. I mean, it's easy to forget because they went into the WCHA playoffs and the Gophers got upset, you know, beat twice at home by Alaska Anchorage. They, you know, ran into some really hot goaltending from Chris Kamal from the Seawolves. But prior to that, they'd gone, I think, about a month without a loss. I mean, they were, like you say, really kind of gelling late last season and had really seemed to have come together and were ready to make a push into the NCAA playoffs. And then got surprised a little bit in their own building, and just like that, it was over. But there were signs of this, like you say.
We talked a lot about the Gophers last week in our November 9th podcast, and of course mentioned, I just wanted to cap that off with their depth up front. They come at you and with certainly more than one line and some big forwards that really can take up space. I like that about their team.
Yep.
Where they're scoring their goals from around the net. And that translates well to the postseason. Michigan Tech, have to mention them.
Absolutely.
And split, you know, last weekend.
Great story. You know, just for a program and for a group of fans, you know, in a small town where Husky hockey is everything, that has suffered a lot in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. Let's be honest. It's been a long time since they've even been competitive. And to have the start they've had has been just a fun story. And talking to Mel Pearson, you know, in the preseason, he talked about, you know, the cupboard not being as bare as some people thought it was, and you know, making the most of what they have. And it's impressive the way they've done that. Now, granted, they've played a lot of games at home early in the season. They've had 8 home games and just 2 road games so far, building a 6-3-1 record. Some road tests coming up for them, and I will be very interested to see, you know, for example, this weekend going to Alaska Anchorage, a road trip out to St. Lawrence after that. They come to Minnesota in early December. They go to the GLI right around between Christmas and New Year's. So I think we're going to know a lot more about Michigan Tech here by about the first of the year.
Yeah, this is an interesting run of 4 weeks, and certainly a good time to have the weekend off, as they did this past weekend with, as you mentioned, Jess, Anchorage on one end of the nation, and and St. Lawrence on one end of the world, and in the other direction.
Who put this schedule together is what I want to know.
Wow.
Obviously somebody that does not own an atlas, because to go from a road trip to Anchorage one weekend to a road trip to St. Lawrence the next is...
Let me say this about the St. Lawrence trip. I just hope they're flying, because I know this is going back maybe 10 years now. One of the years that Mike Sertich was the coach at Michigan Tech, they played a series at St. Lawrence and they bussed from Houghton, Michigan to... where is that? Is it Canton, New York?
Canton, St. Lawrence?
Yeah, they bussed.
They bussed there and back. Wow.
That's so, a whole...
I hope they're getting on a plane for that one. That's all.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the schedule that they play, that Michigan Tech played 8 of their first 10 at home. They've only got, I think it's 9 home games the rest of the season. So yeah, they were way front loaded with home games, and you know, nine home games between November 5th and the first weekend in March. That's a pretty
their home
pretty good span.
Their home schedule's half over, and Harvard hasn't played a game.
No,
wait,
much.
Maybe they have. I don't know.
Our good friends at Google Maps tell us it's about a 17-hour drive from Houghton to Canton.
Yikes. Is that going through Canada?
That is both routes. The Trans-Canada Highway, which is the most direct route through Sudbury, North Bay, places like that, Sault Ste. Marie, all the way across, and then you just come down south and toward Ottawa and cross into New York State at that point. And then the other route, which is more highway specific, would take you down through the UP, down to Detroit, and then across the lower peninsula of Ontario, London, Hamilton, Toronto, etc.
Either way, you're bringing the passport.
Yeah.
Sudbury this time of year is exquisite.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Weather starts to be a factor.
Wow.
So, but full credit to Michigan Tech for what they're doing. I'll be interested to see how they respond not to say that Wisconsin and Denver might have overlooked them early in the year, but those were home games. And Michigan Tech certainly had had a lot to prove and a lot of inspiration there. You know, they won't be able to sneak up. You know, that when Duluth plays there the first weekend of December, it's going to be a different story, I think.
Yeah.
And a Denver team that was trying to get itself sorted, I think, through October.
Yeah, and then, you know, you look at that game that Tech beat Denver, you know, it looks a heck of a lot more impressive on paper when you see that 7-2. Then you realize there were, three empty net goals involved in that in that score. And, you know, that was the game that Murray got hurt in goal for Denver, so they had to go to the freshman. And, you know, he did well, but, you know, you could kind of have to, you know, it's still a good, still obviously a solid win, but, you know, maybe not as impressive as 7-2 might look on the surface.
Yeah.
But hey, they're 6-3-1, so good on them.
Yeah. Let's move to a different part of the country, and another, not so much, maybe this is more in the Minnesota mold, not so much a surprise that they're good, but a surprise at how good they have been so far this year. And that's, of course, a team that is atop the Inch Power Rankings for the first time in our site's history, Merrimack.
Probably for the first time in anybody's history.
Yeah, I was going to say, in fairness, before Inch was around, I don't think there were a lot of weekends where you would have put the Warriors up top in any national rankings. But
Jess, I'm just speaking on the facts I know and can state with certainty. But
well, allow me to speculate wildly then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
You're our historian on site.
It's true. And I write the obituaries, right?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Same thing.
Thoughts and prayers.
True. Thoughts and prayers.
Bus, Merrimack stat of the week?
12 goals allowed.
Last week, right?
In 9 games.
In the season.
In the season.
Wow.
Yeah. That'll work.
Yeah, that'll, you know.
If you play goalie at Minnesota State, that's a weekend. Yeah. Sorry.
They'll, you know, Stefan DaCosta or no Stefan DaCosta, when you're giving up 12 goals through 9 games,
yeah,
you're going to win. But that said, it's not like they're, I mean, they're still averaging more than 3 a game, so, you know,
it's not getting Lamoriello ball, yeah.
No, yeah, they're getting some scoring too, and I think the people that watched the team last year, and I saw them a few times, they were more than just a one man team. Obviously, I mean, they had some pretty good balance up front, and they've got some good defensemen too. So, I think what we're seeing from them this year is, you know, we're starting to take note of that depth a little bit more, and they're getting some great performances from a variety of sources, and I think that's going to bode well for them down the road, because it's obvious they're not going away. I mean, they're going to be around.
Yeah, and you know, this past weekend they just had the one game against BU, but that's a gutty win. I mean,
oh, yeah.
They're down 2-1 in the first period. No goals in the second. Game winding down. Late third. They get a power play and cash that in to tie it 2-2 and then score on the first shift of overtime. So both of those goals for Brodhag and Toomey, first goals of the year. In fact, all 3 goals in that game were Merrimack. So they're getting contributions from a number of players. And that's a BU team that turned around on Sunday and drilled Boston College.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely annihilated them.
Definitely Merrimack's best win of the season. And as you know, as we decided, deserved top spot in the Inch Power Rankings this week. So,
you know, and obviously, you know, you've got to mention Joe Canada, and I think we'll talk about him a little bit later. You know, stopping 94% of his shots. His goals against is under 1.5. But getting back to that balance that they have, you know, Merrimack's two leading goal scorers have 5 goals apiece. One is Mike Collins, who was a pretty darn good player. And the other one's a senior forward, Ryan Flanagan. But, you know, after that, the next highest scorer on their team has 3, and that's from a defenseman, Carl Stollery, who's, you know, who's been a pretty good D-man for them over the years. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, a better statement of their depth, they've got 16 guys who have scored a goal.
Yep.
That's not scored a point. That's scored a goal. That's depth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an experienced team, too. I mean, you look at the birth dates on their roster. The youngest kid on that team is 20. And they've got, you know, a couple guys that are 23, 24 years old. I mean, that makes a difference in, you know, especially early in the season when you've got guys who've got some games and some time under their belt and aren't awed by what they see, you know, in a game like that last one that you talked about, Gladdy.
Yeah.
You know, they're not scared of being down. They've been there.
Yeah. One more team I want to touch on a little bit in our first half, first third positives is Ferris State Bulldogs. Some similarities to what we've seen with some of the other teams. I mean, this is a CCHA this year that's got a lot of good teams at the top, and Ferris isn't, you know, in good shape to make a run at this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, they scored some goals early, and I think that, you know, you always know with Ferris kind of what you're going to get. You're going to get a team that that really focuses on their defensive system, and you know, they're gonna make it real difficult for you to score. And, you know, that's been the case all season for the most part, but they are also scoring goals. The one thing I really like about Ferris is they're getting great goaltending, obviously. And I think that has allowed them to maybe play a little bit more up-tempo offensively than they have in the past. And the other thing I like is, you know, they came into a Michigan series at the end of October, having won six games, four of them at home. What looked like a really nice sweep of Rensselaer, which, you know, I don't know how that looks right now, and a sweep of Miami, which is obviously a good team. And then they did not have a very good weekend at Michigan. Where they lost 2 games, they're outscored 9-2, and I think that could have been a real tipping point for them, as far as, you know, are they going to kind of soldier on or are they going to backslide a little bit? Well, since then they're 3-0-1, and they've gone back to scoring a bunch of goals, beating teams they should beat, and not giving up goals. So. I like where this team is right now, and I think they're playing with a lot of confidence, even in spite of those 2 losses at Michigan, which kind of everybody, at least early on in the CCHA, pointed that series as being a real important series. And, you know, obviously they'll get some cracks at other top teams here down the road. But I think they're going to be hanging, one of those teams that, you know, maybe a little bit like Western did last year, is going to hang around, keep hanging around. You're going to wait for them to go away, and they're just not going to go away.
Good point. I agree with you there. Just very briefly, also, I mean, Lake Superior State, Ohio State, tied for 2nd place right now after Notre Dame won earlier tonight on this night that we recorded the podcast. 2 good starts there, and Ferris did their job. You know, they got the win and tie against Lake Superior this past weekend. So kudos to those teams. And, you know, and here you see Michigan and Miami in 6th and 7th. So lots to play for in that league and a lot of time left. And
big series coming up this weekend for Ohio State. And I think that, you know, in the last podcast we talked a little bit, and I think we touched on them a little bit. And, you know, one of those teams And it seems like there's a handful of them in the CCHA where you kind of, you know, it looks like they might be pretty good, but you don't quite have the read on them or a good read on them yet. Well, they play at Michigan this weekend, two games. We'll know a lot more about them.
Yeah.
And talk about another team that's been getting great goaltending. I mean, Cal Heater has played the majority of the games for them thus far. He was, really good last year, and he's been really good this year.
Yeah. Yep. That's a goalies league right now. There's a lot of guys that are doing a lot of good things there.
Is Brady Jelly getting much work for the Buckeyes? He played.
He has not played much. I think he's. I'm looking at his stats right now. He's had three starts. He's 1-2, but his win was a shutout.
Okay.
His numbers are really good. I mean,
WCHA fans will remember him. Highly touted recruit, went to Minnesota Duluth. Was there a year and a half or so, and just kind of got caught in a numbers game and wound up playing for his old assistant coach, Steve Rolick, who is now an assistant at Ohio State.
There you go. Another appearance.
Set Ubu.
And my dog makes another appearance. Well, good to have her on the podcast as well.
Another special guest of the Inch Podcast.
Oh, great. Now I know where I rank.
you're tied with Jess's dog.
Me and the pets.
Not so much a surprise on their overall record, but maybe a tap of the stick for St. Lawrence. They really had a tough start to their season in terms of wins and losses because of the fact that they were all losses. Five straight to start the year, and it was a tough schedule. I mean, they played Ferris State, Michigan, and RIT and Union those first five games. But then they've responded with three straight wins and currently sit tied for first in ECAC hockey with several other three-win teams. So good job by the Saints getting that together. Many people know that St. Lawrence is still playing without longtime head coach Joe Marsh, who's dealing with some medical issues and has decided to step away from the team on a temporary basis. But three wins in a row for St. Lawrence, and they get some home cooking this weekend, and Dartmouth and Harvard make the trip up to the North Country. So just wanted to mention that team for bouncing back a little bit. We want to talk about some of the teams maybe that are toward the bottom of the standings that we didn't expect, just briefly.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and I think we can kind of sum up the CCHA and WCHA by going to the same state. You know, you look at Alaska and Alaska Anchorage.
Yeah.
You know, Jess talked about Alaska Anchorage and how they finished last year and really had some high hopes and they really looked
to be a program, yeah, on the rise, at least at the end of last season, you know. And what I got that from was not only the way they played that playoff series at Minnesota and the way they carried themselves. It was just, you know, it was this attitude of, we're not surprised to be here. This is what we've worked toward. This is what we do. So they were kind of my sleeper pick. And as I joked with some people, they're definitely sleeping so far. Haven't done much at all. They've played, I think, six WCHA games and have scored a total of four goals in those games, which is not going to get it done in any league. So that's been a pretty big disappointment.
And then you've got,
would you throw North Dakota in that mix too? Or is it
as far as being disappointing so far?
Yes,
absolutely. I don't think that they've met the expectations that anyone has set for them, you know, not including themselves.
Yeah. Most importantly themselves.
Right. But I mean, you know, we've joked about their fan base in the past, but that's a place where there are some very high expectations and, you know, with 3-6 or whatever their record is at this point is not going to get it done in the eyes of anybody at that program.
1-5 in the league.
Wow.
Yeah.
And in fairness, you know, a couple things. One, they haven't been all that healthy. And Rocco Grimaldi has just recently started to get back into the lineup, just got his first goal in their last game. You know, and without him, they're pretty limited offensively. You know, he's a very dynamic player, and I think is going to be a very good college player. So there's not a lot there without him. Their goaltending has been suspect. And the other thing I'll say is, hey, we've seen this before. You know, we've seen North Dakota start out mighty slow and all of a sudden flip a switch and say, uh-oh, here they come. So maybe don't panic just yet.
Yeah, I was going to say something along the same lines. We've seen that movie before with North Dakota. I think the one thing, and I think another thing you have to throw in there is, you know, they lost JT Miller, who was going to come in and be a freshman. He ended up going to the Ontario Hockey League, you know, and he was going to be, you know, a real impact forward on the lines of Grimaldi, you know, and I think they were counting on him, and they lost him real late in the process, or, you know, in the summer. They thought they might have a kid in Colton St. Clair, who was another freshman forward who, you know, certainly had a lot of potential, and he's sidelined for this season because of academics. So, you know, right off the top, they lose a couple guys. You mentioned the injury to Grimaldi. And I'm sure North Dakota wouldn't use those things as excuses because of the expectations that they have. But I think the one thing that really stands out for me about them is watching them against Minnesota. And maybe this is more of a compliment to Minnesota than it is an indictment of North Dakota. But I thought their foot speed was awfully suspect, especially that first night against the Gophers. It wasn't the kind of, we haven't seen North Dakota with that kind of lack of energy in some time.
Yep. North Dakota is a team that's generally known for team speed. And
I just didn't see any playmakers. I mean, you watch those teams in the past, and, you know, Fratton was certainly a great finisher, but even, you know, you throw Trupp and Gregoire and Vandevelde and my man Brad Malone, you know, and they had other options.
Hextall,
yeah, good call. And, you know, and now it's like Christo and a bunch of guys watching them. And that's what troubles me about that team right now.
I think I would take that even a step further, not just playmakers, but making something happen. You know, whether it's a big hit or a good shift where they keep the puck in there.
Yeah, good cycle shift.
Good cycle shift where they keep it in there for about 45 seconds or so.
Yeah.
You know, there's none of that.
Yeah. And with all those factors that we just mentioned, if Dell plays like he did last year, that team's doing a lot better.
Yeah.
So you got to look at all aspects. They needed veterans to carry, you know, carry this team a little bit early in the season while it was getting things figured out, and it hasn't happened yet. But just a couple years ago, I think it was around maybe middle of the season, mid-January, and they were out of the top 20 and then won the WCHA regular season. So we'll we can't. Despite the teams we're talking about maybe not being where they want to be right now, I'd put Miami in that list. I'd certainly put Rensselaer in that list. Maybe Vermont, but there's time to get it together.
Just talking about North Dakota, I was just looking back. You know, I'm the historian. This is what I do.
You are the archive.
08 season, which I believe was the last time they made a Frozen Four. On January 4th, they were 9-8-1, and they lost three more games the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've seen this movie. We know how it can end.
I was looking at the same statistics. You know, you go back even the 08-09 season. You know, they were 5-8-1 on Thanksgiving, and then through the end of the regular season, lost like four more games. You mentioned the same thing happening in
we were flying that flag that year, Buzz.
Yeah, we were. Like, just wait, just wait. You know, you mentioned it in 07, 08. Even go back to 06, 07. At Christmas, they were 7-10-1. Had just lost four in a row. Had been swept at Anchorage and at home to Michigan Tech.
Yikes.
Whoa.
And they ended up in the Frozen Four.
Right.
And we've also seen how the movie ends every year with a loss to Boston College. So,
well, yeah, there's that. Yeah. So
it's like a James Bond flick, you know. It's always going to end the same.
He's going to get the girl.
It's like a Tyler Perry movie. Somebody's going to end up dressed in drag. Mispronouncing words.
I don't watch those.
I don't either. All right, you can just tell from the commercial.
Let's get into the Trackler a little bit here.
Is there any other disappointments you want to bring up?
I mentioned a few names.
I think you kind of have to take a deeper look at Rensselaer. I think they were due for a backslide, but just the fact that they can't score to save their lives is...
they're averaging under a goal a game, which means their scoring average went up tonight. They played Union earlier tonight and scored a goal.
Yeah.
So that boosted their average. It was a home game. It was a rivalry that's really developed over the last 4 or 5 years in that capital region. And from some accounts, it sounds like RPI just didn't have much going for it. You know, there were effort, talent, ability. I mean, there were several times in the game. Again, I didn't watch the game, but some folks who were there, the Union had extended periods of possession inside the RPI end. So, you know, if there's a game you can get up for, you know, it's Tuesday night, you're coming up on holiday break, and then you lay an egg at home. And that's troubling right there. So,
I think you can give them a little bit of a pass because they've had a ton of injuries.
They've missed some guys for sure, and they've had a tough schedule. I mean,
yeah, they've had a, I don't know if it's the toughest schedule in the country to date. Somebody else probably does, but I'm not going to go look it up. But it's got to be right there.
Seven of their games of, what do they got here? 12. 7 of 12 games are against teams in the top 10 of the Inch Power Rankings.
Yeah.
I guess Union's not in the top 10, but including Union. So 7 of the top 12. Then two more were at Clarkson and St. Lawrence to start the league season. It's not an easy trip.
No.
So, you know, they've had a tough schedule, but they've got to get things figured out. They don't play again until the Thanksgiving holiday weekend or at RIT. And then they've got a Lake Placid game where they're going to play Union again. And then... they'll be in the UConn tournament with Army, UConn, and UMass Lowell. So they've got an opportunity here to get things going, but they're going to have to. I mean, these are all points in the standings that they can't get back. And in ECAC hockey, you only play those 22 league games.
Yeah.
Home and home with everybody. So they've played five of them so far, five of those 22, and have 2 points.
Yeah. So. They're in a tough spot.
Yep. That's what I'd say there. But a couple players on the radar. Let's throw out some recognition for some of the individuals off to hot starts, guys we're going to be keeping an eye on throughout the year in terms of Hobie Baker consideration. Jess, any guys, you know, in mind out in WCHA land?
Well, we mentioned him in our power rankings this week, but Jack Connolly at Minnesota Duluth has just been on a tear recently. I think something like 6 goals and 9 assists in his last 10 games. And that mirrors what Minnesota Duluth has done as a team as well. They've, you know, after a shaky first couple of weeks, have really played some strong hockey recently. But, you know, he's a guy that, the school is promoting. He was a finalist last year and, you know, really runs that offense given the opportunity. So he's first and foremost in my mind among WCHA guys.
6-0-2 for the Bulldogs, their last 8 games.
They're awake.
Yep.
They're barking.
And that's with two new line mates.
Yeah. I mean, that was part of it, too. And I touched on it a little bit when they were sub 500 there for a little while. But Connolly and JT Brown on a line just didn't seem to click. I mean, they didn't, you know, they're both great players, but they didn't complement each other. And Scott Sandlin juggled successfully, and you're seeing the results.
Good coaching.
Good feel for the team.
Yeah. Bus, you talked pretty much every week about Anders Lee in the Inch Power Rankings, and deservedly so, but he's got a running mate, too.
He does, and... And, you know, T.J. Tynan, his line mate, you know, they're probably going to be – Jeff Jackson at some point is probably just going to have those two guys sewn together. So they're, you know, so they're constantly with one another because good things always seem to happen when those two are on the ice. He's had a terrific year, you know, 11 games in, 19 points. 16 of them assists, and I've always been when it's come in my years as a Hobie voter back, you know, it's probably been about 5 or 6 years now. I always kind of put an emphasis on goal scoring, but in this case, you know, and Anders Lee for Notre Dame is obviously a terrific goal scorer, and you know, has a nose for the net and is really, really good at finding a way to get the puck in the net, but somebody's got to get the puck to him, and that's Tynan. And you know, he's just a little guy. He's, you know, a little bigger than Gerby, but probably weighs less than Gerby. Maybe not quite as physical, but you know, he's just a magician with the puck. And you know, I think that down the road, I don't see these guys slowing down. I mean, they've been doing that. They did this the entire season last season, and they're obviously continuing on this tear through the first third of this season. I think you'll likely see both of them being finalists in the final 10 when that time comes in March. I mean, they're just. I mean, I don't know what that would mean for their chances of winning, because it really is hard to discuss one or look at one without also bringing the other one into the picture. But yeah, I think without a doubt, they're two of the top 10 players in the country.
That's going around in the CCHA when you think about the Porter Kolarik and
yeah,
Mealy Camper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All those kinds of situations.
Well, I think you might Omaha, have some.
You know, when they were, didn't they have a
Parson?
Yeah.
The guy whose name escapes me, Bill Thomas.
That other guy,
Parson, yeah. Bill Thomas.
Exactly.
The player to be named later.
Exactly. Well, I think you might have something like that cropping up at Minnesota because you've got Eric Halla, and you've got Bukestad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Halla's a little bit more the playmaker, although he has 7 goals, and Bukestad.
Well, let's face it, if they were naming top 10 Hobie candidates right now, too, you'd probably have to put Kent Patterson in that mix with 5 shutouts in his first 9 games. I mean,
Jess, we're going to get to the goalies.
Well, we're talking about Minnesota. I'm sorry.
I know.
Hey, speaking of Anders Lee, I learned this today. I probably should have known this, but 4 or 5 years ago, Anders Lee was the Twin Cities metro area football player of the year at Edina High School, star quarterback for them. So.
Yep.
So he and Mark Ault from the Gophers, two star quarterbacks who turned down football offers because they wanted to play hockey, and God bless them for it.
Wasn't Zach Budish a quarterback also?
Zach Budish was also a very good quarterback.
From Edina.
from Edina. Missed his senior year of high school hockey because he got a knee injury, I believe, at the Metrodome on the football field.
The roof was caving in on him.
Kind of a testament to where hockey is in Minnesota, though, that you have star football players who say, I don't want to play on Saturday afternoon. I want to play on Friday and Saturday nights.
That is true. Chris Kreider, Boston College. He'll have an interesting case. He had a great opening weekend at the Icebreaker. Really could have been playing pro hockey this year and possibly at the National Hockey League level. But decided to come back to BC, and he's off to a very good start. That's a team that'll play a lot of games on TV. It's going to be a different candidacy in terms of the perception from Western voters, because there still is a lot of regional consideration in these things. You know, the fact that, oh, I know BC, and they're on TV some, I can check him out, and I know his stats aren't inflated, they're going to play a tough schedule. So his candidacy will be interesting, and he just seems to have a knack for making big plays. He stands out in a crowd. So that's one to watch.
I think he's a perfect guy where if you're kind of picking somebody that's not, you know, really standing out right now, but has the ability to make a real big impact as we get into January, as we get into February, as the games get bigger, more important, I think he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on.
Another one just off to a great start. Guy was a pretty high draft pick, Austin Smith at Colgate. He's got 16 points in 11 games, has had at least 1 point in 10 of the 11 games. Colgate's been off to a decent start. So I'd say he's probably front of the pack in terms of ECAC hockey representatives. Of course, that's only two or three weekends into to having all the Ivy teams play. So you've got the likes of a Brian O'Neill or a Danny Biega or somebody like that. So we'll see what we get from that. And Justin Schultz of Wisconsin. He definitely stirs that drink.
He runs the show.
Yeah.
It's his show. He picks the guests. He picks the hosts. Yeah. No, and, you know, that's not a new thing. I mean, he's been that guy for the Badgers for at least a year and a half now. And, you know, it's a blessing and a curse. Obviously you love to have a player with his talent on your team, but when he, you know, when a guy is essentially running your offense from the blue line, that places some limitations on what you can do as well.
Goalies. Yeah.
I think another, actually, before you get to the goalies, uh-huh. I think another WCHA name that you have to throw in there, at least obviously put him on the watch this guy list, is Jaden Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's got 10 points through 7 games, which I think by his standards are probably, you know, good, but obviously the talent is there to be better. And, you know, much in the way like Jack Connolly, he's a guy that can just go off for an extended period of time.
Ask Boston College.
Or for one game.
Exactly.
He can do that too.
Seen kind of a small sample of the Tigers. They've only played 7 games so far.
Which, yeah.
You know, where a lot of other WCHA teams have played 12. They're kind of taking the Ivy approach early on here.
they do refer to Colorado College as the Harvard of the Front Range or something, right?
It is the Harvard of South Central Colorado.
Colorado Springs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bring that question up on the podcast. So. No, it's nothing about Colorado College. I was just going to mention that I think Schwartz can be, is he still eligible for World Juniors?
I think so.
I want to see.
After last year when he went there and got hurt, you think he's eager to go back?
They redshirted him.
Yeah.
That's medical hardship waiver.
Yay. I think he is. And, you know, obviously he's going to, I would assume he'd go if he got the invite.
Yep.
Although, as you said, last year was not a great experience. Yeah, he's only 19.
In fairness to the Schwartz family, too, his brother Rylan has got almost identical numbers so far. So they're making a nice brother act for themselves at CC.
Yeah. Keep your stick on the ice.
Yeah. Goalies. We talked about Merrimack's team allowing only 12 goals. One goalie let in all of them. Joe Cannata, 7-0-1. The other guy has a shutout in his only start. But, you know, you're going to have to look for some individual recognition, and with numbers like that, I don't care if it's a system goalie or what. He's right there, and he's obviously very consistent. 940 save percentage. Jesse mentioned Kent Patterson. He's got 5 shutouts already.
Yep.
And then you got the 3 CCHA guys, Bus, that we're kind of talking about before we started recording. Sean Hunwick probably means the most to his team at Michigan. But then you've got, you know, Taylor Nelson at Ferris State, whose team is probably off to the best start, and he's got a great record. And then Cal Heater, who's been tremendously reliable for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, the Ferris situation's interesting because they're actually splitting time there. With Nelson and then a freshman, CJ Mott. Heater, obviously, we talked about previously, but, you know, we were talking about Hunwick prior to the recording, and, you know, is he a Hobie winner? Probably not. Does he deserve to be in the discussion? I think he does, but I think if you were looking at which player could a team ill afford to lose or have its fortunes dramatically reversed, it would be Hunwick at Michigan. They're not an NCAA team without him. I think they're barely a top end team in the CCHA without him. That's how important he is.
We saw that sample of what the Wolverines are like without him that game at Northern Michigan this year, where he got into an altercation and was tossed, and boy, it wasn't pretty. And, you know, that's not an insult to anybody else who plays for Michigan. It's just, you know, this guy is what they're used to and has played a huge role in their success.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of that is they've just, they've had bad luck in losing goalies to the Ontario Hockey League over the past couple of years. So, you know, they're kind of stuck with what they've got, and what they've got is Hunwick, and he's been really good for them. So, he may not be a Hobie winner, but he might be the most valuable player in the nation.
Yeah, that's. That's how it appears at this point of the year. Happy to check in. A little recap of the first period of of the season, if we're going to continue that analogy. Anything for last call, Jess?
Congrats to Nebraska-Omaha. They finally beat Bemidji State.
Big win.
They tied on Friday, which made their career record 0-5-2 versus the Beavers in WCHA play, and on Saturday night they finally got a win against the Beavers. So, good work, Mavs.
Boss, last call.
Did they cut down the net?
I don't think they did. Boy, that would take a while too, because those nets are. I bought a net for my kids for Christmas one year and had to string it myself. It was a project. Let's just say that.
That's a 6-pack job right there.
Something like that.
Depends on whether you want the net to look nice or not.
Well.
Boss, anything?
I've got nothing. Go Tommies.
Tommy football, Division 3 playoff.
Tommy football, St. Thomas. the drive for one. They're ranked third. The St. Thomas is ranked third in the nation right now against, you know, behind
Mount Union and Whitewater.
Mount Union is two and Whitewater is one. So
every year. Yeah. So
can't even, they can't even be a bridesmaid. They might as well just advance those two.
Division two playoffs start this week too. And I just wonder how they do that. Cause don't players miss too much class then if they have a playoff?
Easy.
That's a conversation for another day.
We'll deteriorate on the BCS in a coming episode of the podcast.
That was a teaser, folks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Usually we tease with in-game score updates.
Unfortunately, they were all done by the time we started.
Yes. Like to thank our presenting sponsor, the NCAA Division I Men's Frozen Four.
Years of practice, dedication in and out of the classroom, stamina, persistence, sacrifice. It all leads to this moment. Champions win here. Don't miss the 2012 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 5th and 7th, hosted by the University of Alabama in Huntsville and the Tampa Bay Sports Commission at St. Pete Times Forum in Tampa, Florida. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
All right. Thanks again for listening to the Inch Podcast. For Jess Myers and Mike Eidelbiss, my name is Joe Gladyszewski. Keep following Inside College Hockey for all the latest on Men's Division I Ice Hockey.